It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam is, of course, as you all know, America's favorite soccer dad, who today is remoting in from bright and sunny, where the heck are you?
Jacksonville.
Oh, I've heard of it. In fact, yeah. I heard the weather was very nice there today.
We have five games this weekend between two kids.
Wow.
And my wife and I couldn't figure out logistically how to get into the radio station. So here I am.
Well, through the miracle of modern electronics, you're pretty much just like you're sitting next door, except you can't make faces at me. Well, you can, but I won't see it. Other than that...
That's true. It might be better that way.
It might be. You never know. Welcome back to all the regulars. We keep us doing these things every Saturday morning, which we dearly love to do, especially if it helps some people. If you're new and have just encountered the show either on purpose or by accident, stick around for the hour. We always promise you'll learn something. We never promise how valuable it'll be to you, but you'll always learn something. And we are here for the major purpose. First, our minor purpose is to bring you up-to-date information on what's going on and hopefully throw out some ideas that'll help your financial life. But the major purpose is to answer your questions. So we will talk about what we want to talk about until you change the venue here and you pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, at which time we will pick you up and put you at the head of the line and discuss whatever it is that's on your mind today. I want to start today by giving a great big happy birthday. 74 today, the U.S. Air Force. How about that?
Nice.
Believe that we have been flying around this world for long enough that we've had an Air Force for 74 years. Time flies when you have fun. Well, I'm going to let you do the details. I'm just going to give you my sort of impression of this week in the market. It didn't feel very good, and it didn't turn out very bad. I did notice this morning that the Dow has not been this low since, you ready for this? Tuesday.
I'm ready.
Tuesday.
Since Tuesday?
Yeah.
Wow.
But it just seemed like the end of the week was kind of a thud, didn't it? And yet, it just wasn't that bad.
No, it really wasn't that bad at all when you look at the numbers. But I think it feels worse because there's been sort of a bad mood in the market for a couple of weeks now, and it just really persisted through the week. Anytime you saw some green, you just knew waking up the next morning there was going to be red in the futures. And what the cause of that is isn't 100% clear, but there's some interesting things happening behind the scenes that I'll get into, and the cause of those isn't really clear either. So more on that later. But the actual results, as we mentioned, were not that bad. The S&P is basically sitting on top of its 50-day moving average, which sounds a little scary, except that you realize it's down just 2.5% from its all-time high. So it's certainly not time to sound the alarm on that. The total drop for the week was just 0.6% on the S&P, 0.5% on the NASDAQ, and 0.1% on the Dow. So, like I said, the results were just, I mean, it was basically flat. But there was the biggest thing that happened this week was the drop in bullish sentiment and the increase in bearish sentiment. You would think that we just hit a major recession this week, and that is definitely not the case. We haven't even reached 5%. 10% pullback territory. So I think something about September, and we had a quadruple witching Friday.
The volumes on the market were just humongous.
They were.
6.7 billion on the NASDAQ alone.
Yeah, and I don't know if everyone knows what a quadruple witching day is, but it means that stock index futures, stock index options, stock options and single stock futures expired simultaneously on the same day. So,
which means a lot of trading, a lot of exercising,
tons of trading, and tons of volatility.
Yep.
So, it's not surprising that the market dropped a bit on Friday, with knowing that was happening. There really wasn't much in the market that gained this week. Although small caps were relatively flat, mid caps posted very small losses. I did see that Bitcoin and Ethereum posted gains of 3 and 6%. Energy had a nice week. It gained over 3%. And consumer discretionary was the only other sector to post gains. Materials lost over 3%. Utilities dropped over 2%. Outside of the U.S., things were not that much different. Hong Kong dropped more than 5%. China dropped about 4%. Brazil down 4%. Russia and Japan were the two markets to post gains that I could find, and those were just over 0.5%. Commodities and precious metals got hammered pretty much.
Yeah. Except natural gas.
Yeah. So mostly the precious metals were the ones dragging down the index. Natural gas is actually up 5%, oil up 3%. But outside of that, it was kind of ugly. Gold dropped 2%, and silver was down almost 6% for no reason that I could.
That's insane. We're in a peak inflationary period, and those are dropping. You're seeing a lot of people switch over to crypto from metals, and all I can say is look out.
Yeah, I've seen that that theory that all the metals money is going to crypto. I'm not 100% sold on it yet. It's not a bad theory. I need to see more proof before I subscribe to that's what's happening. The bond market was a bit mixed. Long treasuries gained almost 0.5%, while short-term notes all dropped. Interest rates rose, I think, a little bit, but nothing. They're well within the normal trading range that they've been in for this year. There was a limited economic data for investors to react to this week. It was kind of interesting, I'll say. CPI, which is a measure of inflation, came in weaker than expected, and that was the first time in 10 months that has happened.
I will do a long piece on that before the day is over. Just how big a lie it actually is, I guess. Trying not to be nice.
I don't know what to think about that one. It's if you look at some of the core numbers, the inflation is definitely more rampant than the headline number, and where we're really seeing it is in rent, and that's something that digs into the pocketbook of so many Americans, and especially younger people and people on the lower end of the income scale. And there's a city in Florida, actually Tampa, where rent has increased 30% year over year.
Whoa.
Now, if that doesn't hit you in the pocketbook, who can even afford that if your rent went up 30%? What if you're on a fixed income like Social Security? That's devastating to a lot of Americans.
That's unbelievable. I missed that little stat. Retracing to what you said about the bullish sentiment dropping, I can't think of a better piece of news. That was sort of tied for the number one good thing that happened this week, because it is a contrarian indicator. But it was sort of matched by the retail number, although that in itself was kind of a lie, too. They're expecting something like 0.7 down and got 0.7 up, some sort of mirror image of the expectation. But that doesn't factor in that part of that is that people are paying more for less. The old inflation.
Yeah, they also revised down last month by 0.7.
So. Right. It was okay, but it was not great. All right, we're going to have to take a short break and pay some bills, after which we'll come back, wrap this up, and get the trivia. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam is, as we said earlier, remoting in from some faraway exotic place called Jacksonville, Florida.
So it's really nice here.
I'm so happy. I look forward to testing it out next time I'm in town. We have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Among the volatility for this past week, Apple got some not exactly bad news, but not exactly good news from a judge. And it was about the way they do things in their app store. The market reacted negatively, and Apple lost $85 billion in market cap that day. And where I come from, that's quite a lot of money. Where they come from, not quite so much. But how many S&P 500 companies, and by the way, for those of you who are playing the home game, there are 500 companies in the S&P 500. How many of those are smaller than Apple's one-day loss of market cap? It's a number. It's greater than one and less than 500. How's that? Really got it narrowed down now. All right.
Good hint there.
Pardon? Good hint?
Good hint.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm in a mood just to be real generous today. And a couple other things I wanted to touch on. Small caps are still struggling, which I find a little strange right now. So we'll have to watch that and see what happens. But where the money's going right now, bars and restaurants. They really kicked.
No doubt about it. That's been one of the biggest growth areas out of the pandemic, and they are really struggling to hire people at bars and restaurants. And there's so many anecdotal stories out there. One of them I saw this week was about a small restaurant somewhere in America where a competitor came in and poached their entire staff.
I saw that.
And closed the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Now, you know, people, you don't do that.
That's pretty low.
That is really low. And, you know, enough said about that, I guess. It's nothing I can control, but my goodness. Merge or something, you know?
And not anecdotally, some actual data about that. There is the small business report was issued this week, and the thing that stood out was that businesses are having a really hard time hiring employees right now.
Yep.
And jobs are plentiful. 28% of small businesses said that quality of labor was their biggest issue, which was a record for the report. Another 8% said that cost of labor was the biggest issue. So 36% of businesses have labor issues as their top issue. And I'm sure others have labor issues, but that's their number one problem right now. And that came on top of Amazon announcing that they're hiring another 125,000 people. And so not only are these small businesses competing with the Amazons of the world on price, delivery, convenience, but now they're competing for workers as well.
Did you see the minimum wage they're getting at Amazon?
I think it's $18 an hour now.
Yep. So every little mom and pop shop everywhere is taking it on the chin with this one, because they're now at $18 is the going rate.
In 2020, Amazon hired about 500,000 workers,
yep.
And it brought the current total to about 1.2.
Something wrong. We lost you, or we're hearing some background. I don't know if you can hear us or not, but we can't hear you. All right, I'm going to take Adam off and let him dial back in, because this is not good. Okay, now hopefully he'll dial. Oh, there.
Something happened there. I picked up someone's Bluetooth and lost you for a minute.
Oh, okay. Back together. Anyway, Amazon hired last year, when you think about it, last year was the transition away from retail to the online version of retail, and they had a big, big hiring year at 500,000, and now they're up to 18 bucks, so it's going to be harder. But what I thought was interesting, now, Amazon in 2010 had 34,000 employees. And in 2020, they hired 500,000 new ones.
That's insane.
Quite a little growth spurt, I would say, huh?
No doubt. Almost 1.5 million workers at one company. That's just, it's an amazing amount of lives that depend on that company.
Yeah, if you walk down the street and just randomly select 153 people with jobs, one of them will work for Amazon. That's how pervasive they are in the country. Yeah, amazing, isn't it? I guess I certainly can't complain about it, since we do enough to help them.
Yeah, for sure. I am a frequent user, I would say.
Yep. And the one that I was kind of curious about was sporting goods, which are on a steady decline for 5 months for retail sales. I think I finally figured it out this morning. It's probably due to the shortage of ammunition.
That's part of it, for sure. It is in very, very short supply lately. I wonder if there's other manufacturing supply chain issues that are contributing to that as well. Right. A lot of that stuff comes from China.
Right. Well, speaking of supply chain issues, the backup at the port is something like 8.1 days in California. The ships just sit out there and circle for 8.1 days. That's really helping a lot of stuff, isn't it?
A friend of mine has sent me a text this week, and he imports school supplies from China, and he is unable to fulfill his orders right now because he can drive down to the beach, look out, and there his supplies are sitting on a boat offshore.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The world is something of a mess, and now I see in a couple of the articles I've read lately that less and less people now are willing to work beyond the age of 60. And I just scratched my head saying, what? 60?
Yeah, it goes against what we've been. I mean, people are living longer. They're healthier longer.
Yeah.
And their ability to work is getting greater, but their desire to work is getting less, I guess. I don't know why that is, but it's definitely a trend that we've been observing.
Some of the powers that be are saying that they want to bring Medicare eligibility age down to 60, which would facilitate a lot of these things. And it doesn't help anything, especially when Medicare is under 2 years from going broke. And you don't bring new people into Medicare and think that they're going to contribute more than they get out of it. They might on any given year, but long term, everybody that goes into that plan is a cost. So I'm a little bewildered by a lot of what goes on these days in the hallowed halls of D.C. But that should surprise no one, I guess, right?
That is correct.
All right. I got a few little things and a couple of big things. Actually, because of our not too much time before the next break, why don't you do your PSA for the run out and knock tea?
Sure. For those of you that don't know, one of our good friends lost their son to childhood cancer, a form of leukemia, a couple of years ago. And they've set up a foundation called the Joe Diwali Memorial Foundation, and they're doing a jog for a cure race. It's a 5K race. It's going to be in Nocatee on Saturday, November 27th. And if you would like to participate, you can simply go online to joestrong.org. And it's $35 up until the end of next month. And after that, the price goes up to $40. And they're looking for both participants and sponsors if you're interested. So Joe's Jog for a Cure, November 27th in Nocatee.
And you are in charge of the weather, I presume, so you'll make it a perfect day?
Absolutely. I will do my best.
All right, good. All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. We have a few little comments before it's break time, and one of them involves, you know, we do this about probably maybe a third as often as we should, but every couple of years, it's a lot of, and when I say a lot, I mean a lot of missing money out there sitting around in states and some various government agencies, things like that. And there's ways to go searching for these things, and especially if you've moved to a different state in the last few years or changed jobs a bit, there's a big push in Congress right now to try to link up people with their money from old money that they've forgotten, particularly 401ks, where most of this money is sitting. It's $3 billion that they can account for right now that should be in people's pockets, and Lord knows everybody can use it. So some of the places that you can go are unclaimedmoney.com. And there's the pension plans. You can look at the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, PBGC. It's a government agency. There is a new thing coming online for old 401ks where they're going to be a registry. Congress passes so many things so often that even once in a while they come up with a good idea. And this one is a tremendously good idea. It's going to be a central clearinghouse for old 401ks. And a lot of people nowadays have switched jobs quite a few times in the past few years. This would be a great place to go. For old bank accounts, the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, has a listing on their site. Internal Revenue Service. You can actually go in there and check your status for your taxes over the years, and you never know, they may owe you something. And then there's savings bonds, which you can get through the Federal Reserve and look up to see if your bonds are missing or not paying or anything like that. So go look. Do yourselves a favor. All right, we have to take a short break, and we'll be right back. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we still have a trivia question open. Apple had a bad day this week due to a judge's ruling, and in that day, Apple lost a market capitalization to the tune of $85 billion. Out of the 500 S&P 500 companies, I'll rephrase it a little bit. How many would disappear if they lost $85 billion in market cap in one day? In other words, that is a lot of money. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. And if you care to take a swag at that trivia question, that's fine. I'm going to back up just a second to what you were saying, since the topic lately, inflation, is pretty much on everybody's mind, especially mine. The rent. I like to point out, I don't know, stupidity or disagreements. I log it all as stupidity when people write financial articles and publish them online that make no sense. How about this one? Renting is unaffordable to minimum wage workers in every state. You like that one?
That is so dishonest.
First line, affordable housing is out of reach for minimum wage workers in this country, a new study found, even as policymakers fight for a nationwide living wage. Where to begin? What is the purpose of the minimum wage? To buy a home? Rent a home? No. It's to get somebody started in the job market so they can start developing some skills on a resume so that eventually they'll get a job which will allow them to rent and eventually, hopefully, to buy a home. So, what's the meaning?
It's not just that part that's dishonest. You have you're probably looking at the average home price or average rental price. You're right. Not looking at the bottom rental price, which is what would really be applicable.
Exactly.
You can't tell me that there's not a single apartment in every state that someone earning minimum wage can't rent.
I agree. And 30 states have minimum wages higher than the $7.25 federal minimum wage, a lot of them at $15. But there's a strange thing that goes on there, too. The higher the minimum wage in a state, the higher the cost of living is in that state.
Huh. Shocking.
Who knew?
Additionally, there is a lot of younger people who are single who actually share apartments.
Exactly.
That was something that I always did to cut down on your rent expense.
Yeah. Now, to determine eligibility and so on, they used a maximum of 30% of gross monthly income as a reasonable level for housing. And frankly, I have no problem with that. I think that's overall just not a real bad one.
It depends where you live, though, because if you live in New York and don't need a car, then you can spend more on your apartment.
Oh, you're so going to.
There's more nuances than that even. But I, as a general rule, I do like that one.
Yeah, and if you're making $15 an hour, if they raised everybody to $15 an hour and wait a year, there still will be nobody who can afford the rent on minimum wage. At that minimum
That's
wage,
because right.
things will rise appropriately. It's called market forces, and it is not intended to do this, so it should not come as any surprise that it doesn't do it. And that's the kind of stupidity I look for. I'd rather concentrate on things that make a lot of sense. Bringing me to page two. The soaring cost of food is forcing families to scrimp at the dinner table. Now, this one is serious. And this is a Bloomberg article. Food prices in July were up 31% from the same month last year. That was compiled by the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization. 31%. Now, what does that mean? A, nothing good. And two, that people are going to start revolting. And perhaps We're seeing that right now, where the entire country of Haiti has now collected under a bridge in Texas waiting to come over.
Seriously. There's not much to say about that.
Just ridiculous. And, you know, so much of this is unnecessary. Yeah, here we go. More about inflation. Inflation slowed in August. That was the headline we got this week. And there was a big relief, and there was a relief rally on Wednesday because this came out on Tuesday. Now, the experts were all huddling and trying to figure this out, and they were real happy. This goes back to the Federal Reserve saying that inflation is transitory. Well, let's talk about inflation for a minute. The government, in its wisdom, defines inflation as the change in the consumer price index for all items, CPI, the one we're normally exposed to. But for some purposes, when they're trying to show that it's less volatile, they exclude food and energy, which are volatile, and they call it the core CPI. Which one you'll hear out of the media on any given day is the one that makes the government look best or worst, depending on who's in the White House. So, we have a third way, and this one is kind of important. Measuring inflation the Fed way. The Federal Reserve has its own measurement called the Personal Consumption Expenditures, or PCE, and their line is it more closely tracks what people actually have to spend, which I thought was the entire reason we have a CPI in the first place, but apparently I don't know anything. But it saves it. It is always under the consumer price index, and because they use that to figure out how much the cost of living adjustments for various things are going to be, it saves the government a lot of money. And every time the government saves a little money, it costs us a little money. So I'm not really nuts about that. Let's measure it the people way. You've heard me over the years, those of you who've been around a long time, talk about the Chatwood Index. A fellow named Ed Butowski started this many years ago because he knew intuitively, because he's a purchaser and he's a finance guy too, that he knew that the government was way understating it. So he started the Chatwood Index, which takes 50 cities and tracks the same basket of goods over time every 6 months. And he found that the average inflation rate for most places around the country is a lot closer to 10%, and in some places considerably higher, like New York and San Francisco. And he published that twice a year, and I was alerted a little while ago, a couple months ago, that it's hard to find the Chatwood Index now. So I've been searching for a month on and off trying to find some updated Chatwood Index numbers, and I can't find any. But I did come across a 54-minute interview that Butowski did in March of this year where he was still talking about it. But nowhere in that interview, which I went through completely, did he mention that it's discontinuing. So I'm hoping that he comes back online with it so we can get a better look at what's actually going on in the country, because it would be very pertinent. Let's talk about one more measure. Social Security has its own way, and this one really jacks my jaws. They have something called the chained CPI. And the chained CPI takes into account human behavior. It goes kind of like this. If seasoned citizens who are on Social Security are eating steak and the price of steak goes up so high they can't afford it, they switch to hamburger. Well, the chained CPI knocks out the steak and picks up the hamburger, and all of a sudden the cost of living went up less because they forced us to live less well from here on in. I object. Not just for me. Yes, it's a bad principle.
Such a dishonest measure of inflation. It's cheating is what it is.
It absolutely is. And it's government policy imposed on us in a hidden measure of price increases. But what's going on with the inflation numbers right now is that there are several categories of items in it. One of them was lumber. We traced that early in the year where it went from $500 per 1,000 board feet to $1,515. and then sort of suddenly plummeted all the way back. So the early inflation numbers in the first months of the year included that, and now in August, that's falling out. So what looks like a decrease in the CPI actually produces a lower number, but it's not accurate. It has to take into account the fact that that part was transitory or just a bubble burst. There are a few others. I'll wrap this up a little bit right after the break because the music is playing. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have lines open, 904-222-8255. And on the line, good morning, Don.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Never better. How about you?
I'm getting angry every day about the Democratic Party.
Yeah, can't blame
you. What in the world is going wrong with them people?
Too broad.
I got friends I call all over the country. Up north, out west, California, everywhere. And you know what they're telling me? You there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
They're all telling me the same thing. Biden got elected with empty ballots. Ballots that didn't have a name on them or a phone number, nothing on them.
And you know what's unfortunate? That discussion isn't getting us anywhere today. It's what we do about it now that counts. I agree with you 100%, but there's not a darn thing we can do, so we got to figure out how to live with it and change it. That's my thrust right now. No, you don't have to. No, we're responsible for
it. I'm going to do something about it. All my friends are telling me the same thing. They're going to do something about it.
Good.
So I don't look for the Democratic Party to win no more.
Oh, well, good. If you rally everybody and get them all to vote better, the whole world will be better off.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is a damn shame for this country to be in this shape that we're in.
Nobody agrees with you. No one agrees with you more than we do. Believe me.
The cheap oil comes from fracking the oil.
Yep.
You know what oil fracking is, right?
I'm going to talk about that in just a moment, actually. We appreciate your call, and I hope it gets better. People like you can help. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye.
Well, it's sad true, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, let's pick back up here. The way the number in the inflation number in August got changed was the underlying number has been accelerating for quite some time now. And part of it was just what Don was talking about. And it's because the supply and demand, in other words, the free market system has been interfered with big time. In the absence of that, we wouldn't have the spikes in lumber and the spikes in energy and so on. But that's what happens. So right now we're averaging a fast underlying growth in inflation, but we're subtracting from that number during the month those things that are coming down now due to market forces. General commodities generally do move up and down, but a lot of things generally don't come down. Labor rates very seldom come down. Rents very seldom come down. Home prices very seldom come down. And I know we have exceptions out there like 2008 where that happens, but then we go into a really long up cycle again, which we are in again. But one of the big ones, the one that's probably had the most influence around the world, is the election whereby within 24 hours, our energy policy in this country went from we are self-sufficient to restricted. And you saw the changes immediately. But that affects everything. Everything that we do involves some kind of energy for transportation or heating or cooling or whatever it is, and everything is affected. We have no real way to change that until people like Don and Steve vote again, and hopefully we'll be in the majority next time. So what you're seeing is not the transitory that the Fed is trying to tell us. As soon as these high volatility things settle down, then you'll see the real numbers that are actually happening underneath these numbers. You'll see them rising again. And this is going to cause a major stir. The application of the CPI has a number, an index number, for whatever base you're using. And the way it works is when the cost of living goes up, when the CPI goes up, it's assigned a new base number for this month. Well, that base number has moved up and up and up and up. So let's say it moves up 10% in a year. Well, the next number you get might only be 0.1 or 0.2, so you think, well, that's not so bad. But it's on the new base, which is 10% higher than it was a year ago. That's the scary part of this thing. It will start to compound, and that is what we call runaway inflation if it gets out of control. It is almost always brought to you by inept government policy. That's not going to change. Medical costs, things like that, they're on their way up, let's face it. But one of the most striking things about this year, for all of you who are at all technology-oriented, you know that electronics has been the one saving grace for decades now. According to Moore's Law, which many of you know, where every 18 months technology gets faster and cheaper, that was true until recently. I got a call on, I just want to finish up this very quick thought. Electronics are now starting to go up, and that should scare everybody because that means there's real inflation. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, fellas. How are you today?
Absolutely fabulous. How about you?
I'm doing well.
Good. What's up?
Well, we've got about, 5 minutes left in the program?
No problem.
I'm going to see if you could explain how Bitcoin works for me.
Adam just took a course in Bitcoin, and he is a resident expert, and I don't know anything, so the discussion would be short. So take it away.
I am not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but Ron, what would you say your understanding level is about Bitcoin today?
Pretty much nil. I mean, do you physically walk around with a coin
that's
worth $47,000?
Nope, you don't. That's the whole shtick about digital currencies is that there is no physical representation of them. They exist only on servers, and that makes it unique, and it also makes it secure, which is one of the biggest things about Bitcoin is that it's very, very secure. And it is unable to be stolen or replicated because every server that creates Bitcoin would have to be hacked and reprogrammed to accept an anomaly like that. Then that's part of what makes it so great is the blockchain, and that's how it's mined. That's how it exists. It's all these servers working in unison, those are sort of the benefits of it. Now, the downside of it is that it's very, very volatile, as you may have noticed. It went up 1,500% in 1 year, and it routinely drops 50%. So using it as a currency right now is a bit of a stretch. Although El Salvador just adopted it as one of its legal currencies. So it is being done, but it's in the very early stages. But describing to you what it is, I don't have enough time this week to describe to you what it is. But basically, it is a currency that exists on a bunch of different servers, and it is very, very secure, and it does not allow it to be stolen or hacked. And so there's a lot of applications for it in the future, but right now it's still a bit of a, I would say it's in its infancy.
I can tell you what it isn't. Money. How's that?
No, it's not money, but it does have value.
Yeah, it's perceived maybe. But one more thing, Adam, on that security of it. Remember, the government already hacked back a million something.
But they did. They were able to trace it, and the reason they were able to trace it is because the transaction records do exist in the blockchain. So that makes it less of a tool to for criminals than, say, cash would be.
Okay. I'll buy that.
Yeah, so it's actually good in that respect, in that with cash, you can conduct large illicit transactions with no record. And if you do that with Bitcoin, there actually is a record of it.
How about that?
Yeah. Anyway, hey, could I take a... I'm not sure I did a great job, Ron, but that's the best I can do. And if you want to take a stab at our trivia question, go for it.
Okay, I was going to say around 413.
You know what? You are out of the range by one, and I'm going to declare you the winner.
Aww.
It's 402, and I had a plus or minus 10 on it, and you nailed it. Let's face it.
Well, I don't know about nailed it, but...
Pretty good. 402 S&P 500 companies would disappear off the face of the earth if they had a one-day loss of market cap of $85 billion. I'll put you on hold. We'll get your name and send you something out. Otherwise, we got to run. See you next week. This is the Banwi Financial Hour.
Thank you, fellas.